I think we have them trapped, sir.
Trapped them where?
In the cargo control area.
Where?
In the cargo control area.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica, the Mandalorian edition.
This week, we're covering The Mandalorian, Season 2, Episode 3, Chapter 11, The Hyrus.
The Heiress.
The Heiress.
Oh, whoops, sorry, The Heiress.
I mean, it was close.
Leaving that in.
Yep. Yeah. Totally.
So, this week's Star Wars question of the week comes from listener Michael Darwin. He wants to know, what kind of sentient aliens do you prefer in Star Wars? Humans in makeup, like Bib Fortuna and Darth Maul? Rubber masks, like Wookiees, Ewoks, Ugnaughts, most cantina aliens? Muppets, like Yoda, Jabba, Max Rebo? Or CGI, like Jar Jar and Sebulba?
That's a lot of choices.
Yeah.
I think that it's funny thinking about this, actually, because I watch lots of movies that are full of CGI characters, right? All kinds of them. And I think they're great. And I have no problem with them at all. But then when I think about Star Wars, I'll take humans in makeup, people in rubber masks, or Muppets over CGI characters any day of the week for some reason. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because when I fell in love with Star Wars, there weren't any CGI characters, or there were maybe so many fewer, but it's weird. Like, I'm totally fine with CGI characters, except I'll take the other ones in Star Wars any day.
Yeah, there were none. I mean, CGI didn't exist back in 77, and even in 83 when when Return of the Jedi came out. I think Willow might have been, or maybe it was T2, Terminator 2. I don't know, but really didn't start getting used until then.
Right.
But then in the prequels, it was like, tons of them.
Tons of them. And that's what I think back to. And I just can't think of one that I really liked at all. And I thought they all just kind of looked cheese. So, you know, if I had to pick, like, Wookiees, Ewoks, Ugnaughts, those are pretty cool. So I like rubber masks. But yeah, definitely not CGI in this universe for some reason.
About you, Rich?
Yeah, I think I agree, Chris. I'm going to go with rubber masks, humans and rubber masks, because you know what it is? Most of the characters that I feel define the fantasy world of Star Wars, you know, that define that we're in a galaxy far, far away, we're all the dudes in masks, you know, all the guys in the cantina, guys and girls, I should say, you know, and the Ewoks and the Wookiees. And now with the Mandalorian, it's the same thing. Just the dudes and dudettes and masks, and maybe with a little bit of enhancement of CGI, but really it's still that really, you know, engrosses me into this fantasy world.
But that speaks to the same thing, right? We were younger, and the things that define this universe for us are those characters that have been around forever, or that we grew up with, right? The newer ones like Jar Jar and Sebulba, I mean, nobody likes Jar Jar, let's be honest. So we don't identify with them the same way.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, younger people might have a different point of view. I mean, I like them all. I'd have to agree, probably CGI the least, especially in the prequels. And I think that's in part because Jar Jar's so annoying and Sebulba's kind of annoying too. And CGI was not as good then as it is now. So it really stands out now when you look back on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Darth Maul. It looks super cool. I like the Wookiees. I like Yoda. It's surprising how well that little puppet worked. I know on set they were like, is this really going to work? But then when they saw it on screen, they're like, oh, good, it works. And, and Jabba was awesome. I guess I would lead towards rubber masks in this list, but I really do think, you kind of hinted at it, Rich, that these days, I think, I should have went and looked, but they're getting really good at having people wearing a combination. Like, they'll have makeup and a mask, and they'll enhance it with CG. And I think like Gore Koresh in season 2, episode 1, the John Leguizamo character, I think it was enhanced. And even in this episode, these squid heads, they're called the Quarren. Yeah. I think that was a mask, but either that or it was just full on CG, but I thought it looked great. So I think what they're doing right now is my favorite as far as just being drawn into the world and you know, forgetting that I'm watching something that doesn't actually exist.
I
think they're awesome.
another big thing though, which is a more recent technology, is motion capture. So even when it's a CGI character, it's kind of performed by a real human, right? And they
and so that the motions makes it. But I think Jar Jar was like that too.
Was he mocap? Yeah, he might have been.
Yeah, but they're just so good at all the little motions and also making the textures look more real now.
Yeah, and watching the documentary on how they made the Mandalorian, you know, everyone talks about Baby Yoda because it's a Muppet, but it's also got a bunch of, you know, servos and stuff to make its ears and its face move, these little tiny movements that make it realistic. And it elicits a real response from the actors. Every actor tells you, man, I can't compete against this little thing. He's too real.
He's a scene stealer.
Totally. I know someone who works in film in Hollywood, and she said that the rumors were from the set of this show, just that every time they brought the Muppet out, it was just revered. Like everybody would stop what they were doing and watch and stuff. And they just thought it was incredible. So it's half Muppet, half robot, you know, really.
And I think probably just in the longer distance shots when he's walking around, I think that's CG. You know, I think they use CG for him too.
You're right.
So they really know how to combine it. And I don't know. I need to go look at these squid heads and see how they did that. Cause I would guess it's not full CG, that it's kind of a combination. But I need to go. I should have looked that up for this segment. But anyways, it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good.
Okay, cool. Let's move on to our top three highlights for The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 3, Chapter 11, The Hyrus.
The Hyrus.
So what did you guys think?
Well, guys, overall, I loved this episode. I think it was so fantastic. It might be my favorite one of both seasons so far. You know, it was a tight 30 minutes, had amazing action. Katie Sackhoff was incredible. It was packed full of information. So I think there's a lot to talk about. And I've watched it 3 times already today. And I think I could watch it 3 more times easily. So really, really liked this one.
Absolutely.
Would you say this is your favorite of the series? Because you sound like you really dug it.
Yeah, I think I would. Yeah. I haven't gone back to watch season 1 since we recorded about it, but I don't remember loving one as much as this one immediately. Uh-huh. You know? So I think so.
I mean, Nico asked me yesterday, so what do you think is better, season 1 or 2? And I'm like, you know, I did go back and watch season 1. I'm like, you know, I think maybe season 2 is a little better. I mean, they're both great, but they're really doing a good job so far. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, totally. I think this is probably my favorite of this season anyways.
Yeah.
Everything about it is, like Chris said, you're just like, wow, this is freaking awesome. And you watched it 3 times today. I watched it 3 times yesterday. I was like, can't get enough.
Amazing.
Man, I only watched it twice. I need to go watch
it
again.
Come on, Jason.
You're behind.
I thought it was awesome. I thought it was really interesting because it tied into Mando's heritage with the fight for Mandalore, and it also kind of gave a new understanding of his own history, that he's part of this Children of the Watch, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And the plot of the whole series moved forward a little bit, and it tied into Clone Wars, which was fun and cool. And just on its own, you know, the thing I said last week that I liked the most, it was freaking cool with all the action and the new world and some cool, like, Star Wars classic killing a bunch of stormtroopers on a spaceship. It was awesome.
Yeah. And Katie Sackhoff.
Right. Mm.
Yeah.
I met her. She at Walker Stalker, they got Edward James Olmos, Katie Sackhoff, and Mary McDonnell from Battlestar Galactica. And I got to do a panel with them. And it was definitely one of those times where I was like, how the hell did I get up here? And she was really gorgeous. And she was kind of a little like she's very calm and not so outgoing. Like, she seemed like she was a little nervous, but she was really nice. Edward James Olmos was super nice.
I get that feeling too sometimes when I used to do panels. It's like, what am I doing on stage with Danai Gurira? You know, like, come on.
This happens. It's real.
Yeah, exactly. Am I dreaming this? Like, what's going on?
And at the end, Edward James almost did this whole thing where he had the crowd go, "So say we all." It was really fun.
Oh, nice. That's fun.
So let's get into our top three. Who wants to go first?
I can start again, I suppose. You know, I said there's lots of stuff to talk about in this one, but I'm going to start simple and just mention the cold open, because I was immediately into this episode when we have them getting to the planet and blasting through the atmosphere, and the Razor Crest is essentially burning up. You know, we don't see a lot of fiery reentries in Star Wars. Everything always just seems to, you know, the ships are coming and going with ease, right? And
so yeah.
I loved this. It was exciting. It was a little bit funny at the end, of course. Falling into the water was a nice touch. It's like, oh, everything's going to be fine. He's going to land, and then, you know, misses the thing
jumps
from 2 feet
above side.
It. Yeah. And it reminded me of a scene near the beginning of Serenity. I assume you guys have seen that movie, the Firefly movie.
Yeah.
When they're blasting through the atmosphere and they think they're going to crash and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And of course the Razor Crest kind of looks like Serenity as well. So that helped, but that's what I thought of when I watched it, but I just really loved it. And then right after the show title card comes up, that huge crane pulling it out of the water, I thought was amazing. It was sort of like half AT-AT, half crane.
Yeah.
But I appreciated the fact that they didn't just levitate it out or use the force or something. It was actually a big mechanical crane pulling it out and dumping it onto the landing platform. So it was a great start to this episode. And I had a huge, lots of fun time watching it.
Totally.
Yeah, the effects looked great on all of that. It looked very real.
So good.
Super
yeah.
cool.
Even the, like on the radio, the air traffic controller or whatever saying, you know, Razor Crest, you're coming in too fast, slow down. Like, I liked all that. And then is that a Mon Calamari guy standing on the ground there?
Yeah, just Akbar.
Yeah, exactly. Just looking at it going, oh, what is
shaking his head.
How's my day going to get this bad now? You know, like this
it's
guy's going
to funny to see a fish head guy. Just like, oh man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Stupid landlubber.
Well, Rich, my number three kind of goes into that. Do you mind if I go next?
It's okay. That's my number one, too. We could all talk about it.
Okay, you go ahead, then.
It's the same opening scene. I was just like, what the hell? When we see the Razor Crest fly past the gas giant in the very first scene, you know, and it's heading for the water moon, I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then he knows it's going to be a rough landing, so sure enough, the ship has turned into a fireball from all the friction in the air. And then what got me, though, is when we break through the clouds and we get a peek of this, you know, water world Trask, I paused the TV a couple of times, and I looked around, and it was like, there's no land. It's just a total water moon.
They called it an estuary moon, so.
Everything looked like it was on floating platforms, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that means a water moon.
So I got a little excited, and I was like, ooh, this is interesting.
Water world.
And then it cuts to a Mon Calamari dude standing on the dock, and I got a little more excited, because I'm like, hey, look, they're like aqua-based life forms. And then when Mando finally lands and dumps his ship into the water, the Mon Calamari dude shakes his head. And you can see in the background at that point, some squid-faced dudes, you know, what are they called? The Quarren, you said?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be like a seafaring episode. And then boom, the intro rolls. And I was just like, absolutely fabulous, man. I was thrilled with this opening, seeing the timing, the special effects, the tense landing, all kinds of cool vehicles, the nautical theme. I was like, this episode rocks.
It's gonna rule. Already. And you know what? This new environment, like, almost immediately became one of my favorite Star Wars locations because of all those things you said, and just the seafaring, you know, tone to it all. I loved it.
Yeah. Like netting everywhere and rope and people sort of scampering around on the docks, taking care of their ships and stuff.
Yeah, the docks.
Yeah, and they did a they did a really good job of making it feel busy and alive, like a lot of people around.
And a little pub that serves chowder. And
totally. Unlike sometimes in places like Mos Eisley, where it kind of feels like there's nobody around, you know, but they did a great job with this.
I wonder if that's on purpose. It's just like a dead town, but yeah, it does feel kind of barren. This felt more alive. I wonder if, all the seafaring creatures, I wonder if they, if there's this whole like underwater civilization, there must be.
It kind of follows with the Western theme too though, huh? Because you're like out in the desert all the time and these little dust towns, and then finally you make it to a big city or the ocean and it's like just a 180 on the whole scenery.
Yeah. I think this is like a port city, you know, and they get into the whole trading, black market trading and stuff later on. So this is supposed to be like a port city. So my number three is about the Razor Crest, and pretty much what you guys just said. Like, I love the opening scene with the gas giant, and you see the Trask moon coming up over the horizon, and Nico was like, it looks like Earth, kind of did with the clouds and all the blue. And then you see the damaged Razor Crest kind of puttering along towards it with the door hanging open. And that ship is in bad shape. You see, like, a few times you've seen pieces kind of fly off, like, oh, that can't be good. And then the whole reentry thing, you're right, Chris, they usually don't have that. Mando said the landing array wasn't responding and there was no guidance system, so it needed manual reentry. So somehow that's supposed to mean that you know, they would usually avoid all that like friction, but not this time. Okay, fine. I don't know anything about that, so I'll just say it's fine. Looks cool. By the way, that landing sequence coming in, I read, was a deliberate homage to a reentry sequence in the movie Apollo 13, which kind of makes sense given that Bryce Dallas Howard directed this episode and her father, Ron Howard, directed Apollo 13. That's kind of cool.
Right.
I read that too after I watched it. And it clearly is like it. It obviously is an homage to that, but yeah, Serenity was what I thought of, but it's pretty similar to both.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I loved about Firefly was it was much more, it looked more realistic the way the ships behaved and stuff than usual sci-fi. And then last week I was like thinking of Trask as, for some reason I thought it would be primitive, and I kind of joked, well, is there going to be like a ship repair place? Turns out there was. Do such a great job.
I thought it was gonna be like a swamp or something like that.
Yeah. And then after they did repair it, it was a really bad repair job where it looks like it's held together by ratty strings.
Right.
Yeah.
A bunch of rigging. Those damn Mon calamari.
Kind
of
like duct tape or something. That's what the feel they were going through. And then the engine sounds and all the tech sounds are all derpy and shaky. Like that. And I'm like, man, I wouldn't trust that ship going out into hyperspace. Like,
I know.
In Star Wars, Princess Leia and other characters always said, you know, we're going to take that hunk of junk, talking about the Millennium Falcon. But this one really does seem like
that. Pieces were falling off.
Yeah. Like when it went off to hyperspace at the end, this piece is like twirling in space behind it. So I wonder, like, are they going to, I think I mentioned this last week, but are they getting at him getting a new ship? And we all like the Razor Crest, but I also feel like it's a little utilitarian. And, you know, Boba Fett always had Slave One, which just looked really sleek and cool. And I kind of wonder if they're going to give Mando a sleeker, cooler ship. I mean, it seems like it would still need to have a big cargo space, given that it's kind of his mobile home. And he, you know, the ability of him to be able to take other people on board has really played into the plots a lot. So I don't even know. Maybe they'll just fix up the Razor Crest. They got to do something because it's going to fall apart.
It is in rough shape. Yeah. I don't want them to get rid of it. I like it.
Yeah, me too. I just bought the Lego version of it.
I'm about to do the same thing. I've been thinking about it for weeks.
I actually didn't love it at first, but I've come to like it a lot more as the series has gone on.
Cool. Yeah, I don't want them to get rid of it. It's a cool ship. I think what'll happen probably is eventually he'll get somewhere that has a really advanced ship mechanic or repair station, and they'll really fix it up and make it shine.
Maybe they'll do some modifications or something.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah, level up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Chris, what's your number two?
All right, well, get into it a little bit more deep now, I guess. We have to talk about everything we learned about kind of the state of the Mandalorians in general in this mm-hmm. episode. So, you know, Mando meets Bo-Katan, and she calls him a child of the Watch, which she refers to as a religious cult that are trying to bring back the ancient ways of the Mandalorian. So what's going on here is that there's kind of a more modern approach to Mandalorian society of which she is part of. And they have different values and they take a different approach and they're not so strict about keeping the helmet on and all those sorts of things. And I thought that was all very, very interesting, knowing that, you know, our Mandalorian didn't know about any of this. And he's been living by these ancient traditions, which don't seem to be really all that respected as much in the same way. So I found that really interesting and a really good expansion to the Mandalorian universe and what it means to be a Mandalorian.
It also explains why the Mandalorians that we've saw in, if you watch the Clone Wars or Rebels, would take off their helmets, and Mando has it. And I've always thought, well, how are they going to explain that? So I'm glad that they did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. But, like, it doesn't, you know, I thought maybe this is going to, and maybe over time it will, it'll cause Mandalorian to change his thinking a little bit or whatever, but that's not happening yet. But he does seem to respect these new Mandalorians because, well, he doesn't insist that they return the armor like he did in the first episode with, what's his face there? But I think it probably means that he is going to slowly come around, and this may be a little bit cynical, but I think the show is going to slowly bring Mando into the future sort of Mandalorian society so that he can take his helmet off once in a while. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we get to that point.
So, from what we've heard, Pedro Pascal would love that.
I think he would.
That's yeah. what I was worried about too.
Exactly. And then I started thinking more too, and like, maybe Boba Fett is going to tie into this whenever he comes back onto the show, because as we know, he's not really wearing armor at all anymore, which may not be his choice, to be fair. But, you know, I could see him tying into that and maybe convincing the Mandalorian to, you know, just get out of the past a little bit, maybe. But I thought it was really, really interesting and just a good expansion or addition to what we know about Mandalorians in general. And it was one of the things I loved about this episode, this kind of building upon the world a little bit.
It was a cool moment when he starts to tell them about his quest to take the child back to his species, and they take off their helmets and there's like this uncomfortable pause, almost like to Mando, that's like if you, in the middle of a conversation, just took your pants off.
Right. But it keeps happening to him lately.
Yeah.
Everyone he meets takes the helmet off and he's like, oh, again, where did you get that armor?
Poser.
Yeah, what's going like, on?
What is going
and
on?
And he's like, you do not cover your face. You're not one of them. And then the guy, there's two girls and a guy, and the guy looks at him and's like, he's one of them. It's like, oh, here's another cultist.
Yeah.
Dank Barrick. Yeah. And then she explains, yeah, hey, I'm legit. I'm Bo-Katan of Clan Kryze. I was born on Mandalore, fought in the Purge. I'm the last mm-hmm. in my line. And you are a child of the Watch. Now, it was interesting. Like, she spoke to him as if maybe he didn't know. And she was right that he's a child of the Watch. So maybe they've had experience with people from this sect, not realizing that there were other sects. I found that hard to believe that Mando wouldn't know that there were Mandalorians out there who, and he's different, you know, that stretches credibility for me a little bit, but okay, fine. I guess I'll just suspend my disbelief.
I don't know. I thought it was okay. Like, he was raised within this cult, and sure, he's an adult now, but he's never questioned it. He's never fought against it. And I think it was, you know, we as the audience have bought into this for 10 episodes now completely, that this is what Mandalorians are, and suddenly it's not the only way, and I thought it was great, but...
Not for me, though, because I'd seen other Mandalorians, and I wondered, like, this seems like a plot hole, And so this is how they're filling that hole. And it's still a little to me unbelievable, but I'll accept it.
Is that from Clone Wars? You've seen it?
Yeah. In Clone Wars and Rebels, there were Mandalorians that took off their helmets regularly.
Right. Right. Well, I haven't watched those, so it really worked well for me.
I actually need to go. I've only seen, I think I saw the first two or three seasons of Clone Wars and one or two episodes of Rebels. So I'm not being a very good Mandalorian podcaster by not having gone back and binge those. I need to do that at least before season three comes out, if not before.
Yeah, it would certainly help with this episode.
Yeah,
right. A lot of Clone Wars in here.
Absolutely. Okay, Rich, what's your number two?
Yeah, along the same vein, my number two was mostly about Bo-Katan. I was like, ooh, you know, it's like Mando is a religious zealot. Okay, that's interesting. So most Mandalorians, I guess, are natural born citizens and regular everyday badasses because they were pretty badass. I found that pretty tantalizing. I was wondering, same thing, Chris, where's this little bit of backstory going to lead us? I hope it's not trying to find a way to get Mando to take off his helmet, but, you know, that's to be seen. I wonder if it's like, so for Mando, like, talking to Bo-Katan must be like talking to a Jehovah's Witness, must be like a Jehovah's Witness talking to an atheist, huh?
Or at least from a different, like a Jehovah's Witness talking to a Muslim or something.
Yeah, right, because it's just a different point of view.
Yeah.
And she sure is hell-bent on taking back Mandalore. I like that about her. She's been trying her whole life, you know, if you followed her in the comics and the cartoons. In the past, Bo-Katan has, I think her last name was Kreese.
Yep.
Was in a terrorist group on Mandalore. She's fought side by side with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and she's held and wielded the Darksaber. And she's, you know, doing all this through all these different storylines with the intent of trying to unify her people. So she ain't one to be trifled with. And she would make a powerful ally. But then we're talking, you know, when they were on the weapons cargo ship, she changed the terms of the deal. And I was like, I don't know if that's a particularly trustworthy sign. So
yeah,
it was neat to see this character in this episode, in this situation, and, you know, this version. I was pretty excited. I mean, Mando had to take a big risk when he was rushing the cockpit with all the laser blasters bouncing off his armor. That was a pretty cool scene. But in the end, she got what she wanted, and she seemed pretty cool about that.
Yeah, she seems like one of those edgy characters who sometimes will, you know, do something that's not in everyone's interest. But
yeah,
she's at heart. She's trying to fight to gain her homeland back, and
yeah,
she's, you know, exciting and cool, I would say.
She is, but let me ask you guys a question about her, because, you know, at first, I was really, really on board, and I thought, yeah, she's doing this really noble fight, you know, she wants to reclaim her homeland, and when they're sitting around in the pub there, she says that they're going to put, you know, instill a new Mandalorian on the throne. And I thought, oh, this is great. She's really fighting for her home world. But then at the end, right after they take the Imperial ship, she says to Mando, how can I rule Mandalore right, without the dark saber or something like that? So she wants to instill herself in the ruling role, right? And she needs the dark saber to do it. So I got this uneasy, she doesn't seem so cool anymore feeling, like she's just trying to gain the power for herself.
She was looking out for number one, man.
Looking out for number one. But does that come from her past character that I'm not familiar with? Or is this something new?
I think in the past, she's always working towards the greater good. Trying to, you know, because Mandalore was in shambles after the Empire was done with it. And she kept trying to get the people to unite.
Right.
Well, there's a whole story thread about Mandalorians that takes place over a few seasons in The Clone Wars, which is a 7-season series on Disney Plus, if you guys want to watch it. That character was voiced by Katie Sackhoff. So
right,
it's cool that she gets to come play her in live action.
Yeah.
She's the second character to come from The Clone Wars and be played in live action. The first was Forrest Whitaker playing Saw Gerrera in Rogue One. But in IGN.com talks about her storyline. She's a young woman who was born on the planet Mandalore and was part of the influential House Krees. She's the younger sister to Satine, Duchess of Mandalore, though where her sister is kind and peace-seeking and a pacifist, Bo-Katan is a more hardened fighter. Bo-Katan starts out as the leader of the Night Owls, an elite group of blue-armored Mandalorians. In Season 5, Katan is of the Clone Wars. She's a member of the Death Watch, a radical Mandalorian splinter group that aims to overthrow Bo-Katan's sister, Duchess Satine, and claim the planet of Mandalore. So I guess, yeah, there's kind of a civil war thing going on there. Her fellow Mandalorians rescue a stranded Darth Maul and savage Opress, only to supremely regret that decision as Maul and Opress scheme to use the Death Watch to gain power and take revenge on a common enemy, Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. We learn the significance of the Darksaber, and before the end of the arc, watch it trade hands. And while Bo-Katan is a member of the antagonistic Death Watch, we see glimpses of her good heart underneath all that armor. Then in Season 7, that Mandalore arc comes to a conclusion. Bo-Katan allies with Ahsoka Tano, who we'll talk about later, to take on Darth Maul and try to save her home planet. And I think by the end of that, so I brought up this whole Darksaber last season, and I'll talk about it more again in the lore section here, but basically, if you hold that, it's sort of the symbolic item that the leader of Mandalore holds, which is why she's seeking it out right now. And she had it at the end of Clone Wars, which I think meant that she was set to be the leader of Mandalore if she wasn't already. You saw that, Rich. Do you remember?
I think she did, actually. Was on the throne for a little while, but then because, you know, the Empire left the whole planet in shambles, a lot of different terrorist groups and factions and, like, you know, Child of the Watch and all these religious groups all broke out, and then they were kind of warring against themselves, and I think one of them got her off the throne somehow.
Oh, okay. Well, so did she have the Darksaber? I thought she
did.
Last we saw her, she had it. And we don't know how Moff Gideon got it from her.
Right.
But yeah, it was probably in this great purge that they keep talking about.
Yeah.
So is the Darksaber a Mandalorian artifact then?
Yeah.
Not? Yeah, okay.
I think
okay.
so.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Clone Wars was from 22 to 19 BY. That's before the Battle of Yavin. And Mandalorian is 9 after the Battle of Yavin. So that's about 30 years later. So I don't know how old Bo-Katan Krees was supposed to be in Clone Wars, but we'll say like 25. That would make her about 55 right now. So she's looking pretty good for 55.
Looking fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait till she holds the Darksaber. That's gonna be,
that does that's sound like it's going to be an awesome moment. I'm going to have to
excuse myself from the TV room.
But my number two is all about the Mandalorians, and I thought it was super cool to see. Well, first off, like, you know, when the squid head ship captain knocked baby Yoda's cradle into the water, that was very shocking. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
That was a good moment.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Then this monster comes up with his big teeth and engulfs the cradle, and baby Yoda closed it. Then Mandalorian immediately dove in, and the captain's like, lock it up. Go now, go. So it was suddenly very intent. And then he said, the best car is ours. And I'm like, yep, a suit of iPhones, just like I was saying last time.
Yeah. Like wearing a bullseye on himself.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then the three Mandalorians come down and beat the shit out of the Quarrens and kill them all really quick. And that one, Koska Reeves is her name. She goes down to get baby Yoda. So they're just immediately badass. And it was fun to see them.
They're just so capable. Like, yeah, they're like amazing. I love that whole sequence, like everything in this episode.
Yeah.
Watching them fight and having Mando almost drown, and you don't have to see what happens underwater, right? She just goes down there, you hear some explosions or blaster fire or something, and then she comes shooting out.
Right.
It was so great. Yeah.
And by the way, the Mandalorian is saved once again.
Once again.
I was like a little disappointed though in Mando. I'm like, what? He couldn't do that?
Right. He has to get saved every once in a while. Like once
right,
a
month,
so. Yeah. But he then saved them at the end. So there's that. in the ship sequence, which is also super cool. And I won't go into too much detail on that one, but just saying how badass they are, it did seem like almost like they were terrorizing the ship and everybody on board was afraid of them. So that was kind of interesting. But then, so the other ones are Cosca Reeves. It's her first appearance. She's played by Sasha Banks, who's a professional WWE wrestler. And then the other guy is Axe Wolves, who's, it's also his first appearance in Star Wars. And what are they doing there? Well, Trask is a black market port and they buy and sell weapons plundered from Mandalore. People buy and sell weapons plundered from Mandalore there. So Bo-Katan is seizing the weapons to use them to retake the homeworld. And also she's looking for the Darksaber, which she seems to realize Moff Gideon has, but I think this commanding officer sort of confirmed that. But then he killed himself with his like cyanide sci-fi electricity something or other before she could find out where Moff Gideon was. So I assume she's off still on a quest to find Moff Gideon.
Yeah. That makes you think that their paths are going to cross again.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not even this season. I could see that being a storyline that spans several seasons.
Right.
It could be. It's got long-term potential to it for sure.
And it's not part of the Mandalorian's mission right now, but I can see him getting caught up in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, Chris, what's your number one?
Well, you know, you mentioned the big fight on the Imperial ship at the end. I thought it was a fantastic battle. It was fun. It was reminiscent of other things we've seen in Star Wars. You know, there was a bit where the camera's just focusing on a door and they're waiting for it to open and everyone's lined up along the sides of the corridors, you know, but we've seen that before with Darth Vader coming through, coming through doors. Mm-hmm. But it was fun. It was exciting. It was,
you're right, but the tables are turned here, just like I was saying, which is cool.
Yeah. Very, very cool. Fun to see stormtroopers again, even though they're completely useless. But learning a little bit about what's left of the Empire too, and how it seems like an almost an extreme military cult, and if anything, right? Like that commander who I thought was great, the commander of the Imperial ship, he was so deadpan. That's not really the right word, but like not a ton of emotion. You know, he just said what was going on.
That's Titus Welliver, who played the Man in Black in Lost.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize that. He was great. I thought he was great and it was a great character, but he was willing to die by plunging the ship into the ocean. And then he bites the suicide capsule,
kills his crewmates.
That's right. That is some serious dedication to whatever the cause is now with the Empire. And I think, you know, the Empire might be a little bit stronger than we think still, because he mentions that they're going to rendezvous with the fleet. So there is still a fleet of Imperial ships. Obviously, they're being led by Moff Gideon. And I think this is kind of why we needed to see those New Republic X-Wings last week, because this is the counter to that, right? The Imperials and the Empire are still around. They may not be ruling anymore, but they still seem to be pretty powerful. And, you know, there's obviously a greater conflict here amongst the New Republic and the Imperials.
Yeah.
This episode really hinted at it a little bit, and I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, and it makes the whole background of this show, you know, just like, you know, there. It expands the universe. You're like, oh man.
Yeah.
They're in the middle of all this crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this series takes place, I think it's just 5 years or after Return of the Jedi, you know, when the second Death Star was destroyed and the Empire was defeated and the Emperor was supposedly killed. And so then we have Force Awakens. That was the next movie. And the First Order was already a big threat. So maybe these Imperial holdouts will end up forming into the first part of the First Order, you know?
Yeah, because that's like 30 years later, right?
Yeah.
Force Awakens. So here we are, what, 4 or 5 years later. That's like just enough time for the Empire to kind of resurge a little bit and get organized. And whatever happens between now and Force Awakens, I actually am pretty curious about at this point. Because
I know. It's cool they're showing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you imagine having one of those Star Destroyers? I mean, just one of those ships can do damage to a planet. So I'm sure there's plenty of them left over.
As I was reading the internet a little bit about this episode, there are rumors out there that Moff Gideon does have a Star Destroyer as his command ship. So,
uh-oh.
Pretty bad, maybe.
Trouble a-brewing.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking, huh, maybe Mandalorian will get caught up in some sort of galaxy-impacting events. But if he does, we know he fails because the First Order.
You know. Well...
I don't know, maybe he'll make a dent. Who knows?
He'll make a dent, right. Yeah. There's different degrees of success.
Right. Okay, Richard, number one.
Yeah. You know what it was that made this episode kind of I don't know, one of my favorites, I guess, to shorten it all up is the special effects. It's funny, you asked the question at the beginning, what kind of aliens do we prefer? And I'm like, guys in masks, but the special effects, the CGI effects in this episode were pretty freaking awesome. I was never shuttered out of the fantasy for the entire episode. I thought that all the special effects only added to the realism, and it really sucked me in. Some of my favorites were the landing scene, of course, the giant crane. I think you mentioned that, Chris.
Yep.
It looked like it was carried by, you know, a repurposed AT-AT. All-terrain armored transport walker. The scenes with the Mandalorians flying around in their jetpacks, that was totally
cool.
They were
great.
Especially when they were, when they were chasing the cargo ship.
And when, at the end, when Mando, like, left and he just jumps out like he's skydiving for a second and then kicks in.
That is so cool. I think
it makes you want to have a jetpack.
I think the jetpack scenes look better in this episode than they did in the first one. So they've upped their game a little there. Yeah.
And then I think probably what I dug the most, though, was the scenery, the landscape shots, if you will. You know, you get to see Trask from above quite a few times with all the flying around.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it takes you all the way down to the docks. The docks were, like, super detailed. It gave you, like you said before, it gave you the sense of, you know, it's a busy port. We even get to go on a little boat out on the ocean. You get to see a little seaside pub. Yeah, it was really cool. And taking the weapons cargo ship with all the laser blasts, that was, you know, it reminded me of when Luke, Leia, and Han were on the Death Star. So it was, what a wonderful job this crew and the special effects teams did.
They did, for sure. And, you know, it never to me felt like that Imperial ship didn't look real. Like it looked heavy. It looked like it had weight when it was taken off. There was a long shot from behind it, and just you see the engines, you know, light up, and it just looked so good. And even when it was plummeting down and they had to, you know, avoid crashing into the water there, it just felt like it was real and heavy, and it didn't feel like just a bunch of pixels on a screen. You know, they did an amazing job.
When I was a kid and I loved Star Wars, and, you know, Star Wars was like the first really big, like, mass geek culture thing. And it, I mean, maybe you guys some people might debate that, but it was huge in a way that nothing had been before, I think. And I wondered when I got older, like we heard about the prequels. I'm like, am I still going to like Star Wars when I get older? Or am I going to be too grown up for that? And no, I mean, now, you know, we all like comic books and superhero movies, and it's crazy to even think that, but just hearing you guys talk about, the weight of the ship and the way everything looked, we can even appreciate it on another level as adults. Like, kids don't really consciously give a shit about any of the things that we're talking about here. They might appreciate it on a subconscious level, but it's really fun to be older and just get into all these little details.
It's so much fun to be older.
Sometimes just leave all that stuff behind and be like, that looked cool.
It,
right. That's the best thing, right? We can appreciate those sorts of details, but we can also be like, oh my God, it's so cool. Can I watch that again?
Rewind.
Anything else, Rich?
No, that's it.
Okay. Lore and callbacks. So as I mentioned, these Squidhead guys are called the Quarren. They are in universe called Squidheads, but that's a derogatory term, apparently.
Oh, man.
They're native to the planet Mon Cala, where they coexist with the Mon Calamari in a peaceful but tense relationship. The first one appeared in Return of the Jedi in Jabba's palace as one of Jabba's servants. And they've been supporting characters in some of the Clone Wars stories. The Mon Calamari are those fish-looking guys, the same species as Admiral Ackbar from Return of the Jedi, who, of course, we know for his famous line,
"It's a trap."
That's right.
It's a trap.
It's a trap.
And when the Mandalorian asked, it was a Mon Calamari servant, right, in the pub?
Yep.
For yeah. information about other Mandalorians, and he says he knows someone who might help, and then he goes over to the, some squid heads at another table, and per the closed captioning, he said that there's a Mandalorian, he's looking for others of his kind, he was asking about passage, he's wearing Beskar. So I feel like this Mon Calamari is setting up a trap, and maybe when we first saw him, we should have known, it's a trap! And I think that's on purpose. Yep.
Yeah, it's possible. It caught me by surprise, though. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then it was like, all right, the Beskar is ours, boys. And I'm like, damn, again?
Yeah. Me too. I was surprised. Me I was too. Just so excited to see a boat in the Star Wars universe. I don't know if I ever have, but it, I was surprised as well.
I think, yeah, it was a surprising moment. Like, just going back and watching a second time, that made me feel like, okay, he's leading, he's friends with these guys, and he's helping lead the Mandalorian into their trap.
Yeah.
But I don't think we were supposed to know that.
I was impressed with the cradle, too. The little cradle that Baby Yoda's in. That thing saved his life a couple times.
Yeah, but it's broken now.
It's destroyed now. That was one of my notes, but yeah, it's destroyed. I don't think we're going to see it again.
Maybe he'll get a new one.
He'll need something. Mando can't just carry him everywhere.
Yeah, it's cool how it just floats beside him, so I'd hate to see that go.
Yeah.
Maybe it's gone.
Maybe they could give him a little tiny jetpack, a little baby jetpack.
No, that just reminds me of Yoda fighting Count Dooku, which I hated, like Daffy Duck flopping around. The monster was called a Mamacore. You ever see a Mamacore eat? Quite a sight. Come on over. I guess that's his first appearance, but he kind of reminded me of a Sarlacc with his like round mouth of teeth.
A little bit of an aquatic based Sarlacc. Yeah.
A lot of round mouths in the Star Wars universe.
There are.
I know. The Imperial Gozanti class cruiser that the Mandalorians capture is common throughout the prequel and original trilogies era. And the alarm that blared within the cruiser is the same alarm we've heard in the original trilogy, I guess.
Yep. Very familiar.
So Moff Gideon has this darksaber. I talked about this before, but I thought I'd repeat it since it's coming up again, that it was featured in storylines in the Clone Wars and Rebels. And it was created over 1,000 years ago or prior to this by Tar Vizsla, the first and only Mandalorian to ever be a Jedi. After his death, the members of House Vizsla stole it and used it to unify the people ruling all of Mandalorian wielding that blade. Since then, it has been viewed by Mandalorians as a symbol of power, and whoever holds it is viewed by Mandalorian traditionalists as the rightful ruler of Mandalore. And defeating the blade's owner in ritualistic combat is the rightful path to power. And then during the Clone Wars, Tar Vizsla's descendant, Pre Vizsla, who was voiced by Jon Favreau, used the blade to rally his Death Watch recruits against Duchess Satine Kryze, who's Bo-Katan Kryze's sister. And then they forged an alliance with Darth Maul, who killed Pre Vizsla. Like betrayed him and killed him, and then became the new leader of the Death Watch. And then at some point during the last days of the Clone Wars, the Darksaber fell into the, well, ultimately the possession of Bo-Katan. And then that seemed to open a brighter future for Mandalore. And so that was the last I had on that. So as far as I knew, that was the end of that. And then next time we see the Darksaber is when Giancarlo Esposito has it.
Yep.
Okay. So then at the end, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I was sort of like, why would he go to the Mandalorians to figure out where the species came from? But they, then when he did find the Mandalorians, he said, I'm looking for a Jedi. So I think that was his intent all along, to try to find the Jedi, which is what the armorer kind of told him to do. And so when he asks Bo-Katan, where can I find a Jedi? She says, take the foundling to the city of Calodan on the forest planet of Corvus, which that's the first mention, by the way, of both of those. And she said, there you will find Ahsoka Tano. Ahsoka Tano is one of the main characters of the Clone Wars series, and she was Anakin's Jedi Padawan for most of it. And she was also in the follow-up series Rebels, which took place between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. The Clone Wars, of course, is between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And then I don't think this is a spoiler, because I don't know how much to say about all this, but hopefully you've seen Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker, people listening, but her voice is one of the Jedi spirit voices that guide Rey during the final battle with you know who.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So in The Mandalorian, she's going to be played by Rosario Dawson.
Ooh.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think she looks the part. And there's a lot to her storyline. And I don't want to spoil much more. And, you know, who knows what's relevant to get into or not. But I figure let's see how she shows up in the series, and then I'll figure out what to say about her.
Yeah, she was really cool in the Clone Wars cartoon. I'm excited to see this version of her character in live action.
Yeah, even not knowing much about her, I am too.
When I started watching the Clone Wars, I thought she was kind of annoying. But I only watched the first couple seasons, and people seemed to love her. So did she like get cooler over time?
Yeah, well, she started out as just a little kid. And then by the end of the series, she was pretty kick-ass.
Okay, yeah, I figured that must have been the case.
Especially when she faces down Vader.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
I mean, anybody who faces Vader instantly becomes a grown-up.
Yeah, that is great because, you know, Vader is Anakin, and she was Anakin's Padawan. And then Anakin turned to the dark side. So, yeah, it'd be worth watching Rebels just to see that.
I should probably do that. It sounds like something I need to watch, and I feel left out, so I better do it.
Okay, what about notes, Chris?
Well, is that the first time that Mando has called Baby Yoda's people Jedi rather than just his people?
I was wondering about that. It's like before they'd always say, you know, like these people with witch powers or something, huh?
Yeah. It just stuck out to me. I thought maybe it was, and I thought that was interesting. So finally now we're actually talking about Jedi. Let's see. I thought the chowder coming out of a tube above the table was both kind of funny and super gross at the same time.
I thought it was gross until they called it chowder, and then I was like, that might be good.
Well, I love chowder, but I don't know if I'd want it pumped out of a tube above my table. The little squid that jumped onto Baby Yoda's face, was that supposed to be in the chowder, do you think, or was that not supposed to be there?
I don't know. That seemed to be a running thing in this episode, huh? Because then there was another one at the end in the ship trying to get him.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess. Maybe just go either way.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, he ate it at the end anyways, so yeah. Let's see. They took a dig at stormtroopers, as we've mentioned. They couldn't hit the side of a Bantha. That's a common Star Wars joke. It seems like the point of the frog people was entirely so they could babysit the child while Mandalorian is off doing something else, which I guess they need. But at the same time, relating back to last week a little bit, Mando's still learning how to be a good parent, you know, and he tells Baby Yoda to be respectful while he's there and not eat their eggs.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean by that.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny when he goes and picks up Baby Yoda at the end. He clearly understands him and he says, no, I have enough pets, because I think Baby Yoda wants to bring a little frog person with him. And then I realized watching this that this whole season so far, and I know it's only been 3 episodes, but you could totally call it totally but first when you think about it, because in the first episode, it is, I will totally give you this Mandalorian armor, but first you have to help me kill this great dragon. And in the second episode, yeah, I'll totally lead you to a Mandalorian, but first deliver these eggs somewhere. And in this one, of course, it's, I can totally tell you where there's a Jedi, but first I need help taking down this Imperial freighter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a funny formula, but it works, I think. And like I wouldn't be surprised if the whole season goes like that, maybe until
the end. All these fetch quests.
Keeps having to solve
to the
a quest.
Next level. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Level up, keep going. So
we said that a lot about season one too. I think that it reminded us of a video game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's not that different, I suppose. But this one jumped out at me more in season two for some reason. And he also, like, every episode ends with him like flying away somewhere else, which again is similar to last year too. So that's all I've got for notes.
I just have a couple. I got one that says, "Yay, the frog lady made it to her husband." I felt, you know, maybe a little bit of redemption from watching the kid eating her eggs all last episode.
I was glad there were still some eggs left.
Like, thank God. The line goes on.
I mean, they were all asleep in the ship when they arrived. So if Baby Yoda had woken up, he could have just gone to town on the thing and there'd be none left.
Yeah.
I'm glad he didn't.
I started thinking too towards the, kind of in what you were just talking about, Chris, you know, it seems to be getting a pretty expensive expedition for Mando. He keeps paying off people
right
to get information. And it's like, it's just causing him nothing but trouble.
He buys information. He said he had to spend 1,000 credits to get the ship fixed and barely got it fixed. You know, he's going to run out of cash.
He must be pretty well off.
Yeah. I don't like having to worry about him going broke. I don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Another thing, too. I'd be kind of pissed off. But again, Mando, he never says, never complains, just keeps pressing on. But I'd be kind of pissed if I spent all those credits like he did, and then he didn't even get what he wanted. It was the others that found him. The other Mandalorians found him. He didn't find them. So he wasted a bunch of money there.
Well, yeah, that's true. He paid for bad information.
Yeah. You know, he paid to get his kid fed to a giant sea creature, basically. Mando, he seems happy. He's got a place to take the kid, kind of our final scene. That's going to be interesting. Of course, you know, everything's hunky-dory now, but that just means something terrible is going to happen.
Well, I just wonder how things are going to go wrong, because if he does actually end up finding a Jedi and, you know, he gets the baby to somewhere that he can leave it, I mean, that's not going to happen, right? So something has to go terribly, terribly off the rails.
I know. Huh?
I mean, we don't even know for sure if Ahsoka Tano knows anything about Yoda's species.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, right.
We'll take on. I mean, yeah, is Mando just going to try to, I think that's his ultimate goal, to get the child back to his species, not just give him to a Jedi.
Maybe.
But I don't know.
Yeah. She might have a thing against Mandalorians too.
Right. Yeah. She probably.
You're a bounty hunter. Die.
Right. Give me that baby. No, tell me where to take it. No, give it to me.
Maybe we'll get to see a lightsaber.
Yeah, I bet you we will.
That'll be fun.
We've only seen a darksaber so far.
Yeah.
That's all my notes.
I loved when the Mandalorians were totally kicking ass on the freighter, and the officer says, you know, open the doors, and then they come in and he's all, close the doors. Which one? All of them. Close them. And they close them. And then he goes, I think we have them trapped, sir. And the commanding officers trapped them where? In the cargo control area. Where? In the cargo control. Ah!
Yep. Pretty good. Didn't think that one through.
That was awesome. And then, I think they did a really good job of continuing on with the whole joke of Baby Yoda eating the eggs without kind of beating it to death. Like, he didn't actually eat any more eggs, which I was kind of relieved at, but he wanted them still. And that was funny. Like, when Frog Lady met her husband and they gave a hug, and that was really nice. And then Baby Yoda looks sad, like, I want those eggs.
Yeah.
And Mando's like, I know you're hungry.
He acknowledged it. He said, I know you're hungry. We'll find you some food.
Yeah. And then he gets attacked by his soup with this little face hugger that's terrifying to us. And Mando casually is like, don't play with your food.
That's right.
I wonder if seafood is the child's favorite.
Yeah. He
seems to dig it. Huh?
Well, frogs, is that considered seafood? I don't know.
I want to go back to Trask.
Then just when you think, okay, good, the eggs are safe at home, Mando and Baby Yoda have left, he takes Baby Yoda back to Mr. and Mrs. Frog's for babysitting, and he's like, you're going to stay here, so be respectful. You know what I'm talking about. And Baby Yoda kind of grumbled a little bit. And then immediately goes over to the egg canister, puts his hand on it, and starts staring at it. And then the little hatchling comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks delighted. And then at the end, you see him in there, and there's some nice music as he and Frog Lady are petting this little tadpole in a bowl of water. And then Mando comes in. You know, knocks at the door, comes in. Thanks for watching him. Come on, kid, it's time to go. And he picks him up and he's like reaching for it. No, 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 no. And I think he was seriously going to eat Frog Lady's child if Mando didn't pull him out of there.
That might have been too much.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
But I absolutely would have been. But I think it was the idea that, you know, this whole time with these eggs, you've got some people thinking he's doing something nice, right? But he's not. And here, the way he's reaching for it, you could interpret that as a kid who's fallen in love with a little pet. And that maybe that was what happened, but it also could be that he just really wanted to eat it again.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, I only have one news item. It's kind of long, but I think you'll find it interesting. So, I don't know if you guys saw, but some fans are upset about Baby Yoda eating Frog Lady's eggs last week.
Yeah.
Right.
A few articles I saw online were entitled, Baby Yoda canceled amid accusations of genocide. Did Baby Yoda jump the shark with the Mandalorian eggs episode? And Baby Yoda fans outraged after he commits genocide in the Mandalorian season 2. A few examples of people's comments on Twitter. Gosh, Baby Yoda's losing the charm. I hated him because he ate the eggs of a lady frog and her species. It's an extinction. I'm a mom. It's not funny at all to hear Mama Frog Lady go into great detail about how important and beloved her eggs are to her and have to watch them get eaten on 3 separate occasions for shits and giggles. Can't just one mom get to survive and keep her kids? It concerns me that the child's appetite might lead to the end of a family line or maybe the extinction of a species. I don't know. But hey, the kid's adorable. So here's a pop figure celebrating that genocide. Did you guys see there's a pop figure with the little tank of eggs?
Oh, there's no.
Yeah. Really?
It's crazy. And then there's some more serious ones. As a Star Wars fan with a history of multiple miscarriages who is saving up for IVF, them playing this as a bit feels extremely gross and mean-spirited. So as a person who went through fertility treatments and the mother of a baby who tries to eat everything, I get the intended gag of Baby Yoda eating the eggs. My first reaction was, oh my God, it's my child, but then stop it. The story makes it clear those eggs are important. And then some people tweeted in support of the episode. The amount of people offended by this episode is ridiculous. I had fertility issues and I thought the part of Baby Yoda eating the eggs as dark humor. Chill the hell out. It's a sci-fi film. No eggs were truly harmed. Someone else said, if you're a person living in this world today, and this is the sort of thing that makes you upset, please consider joining one of those one-way missions to Mars. It's a TV show, not real. Now I hope it grows up and becomes a human baby eating monster that the galaxy cannot stop just for fun, because it's only TV and not real. So last week, I was wondering if this might be upsetting to some women who have a personal understanding of how precious and limited eggs are. And it turns out there were people who felt like that. Lucasfilm creative art manager Phil Shostak tweeted, for the record, Chapter 10 of The Mandalorian makes it clear that the Frog Lady's eggs are unfertilized, like the chicken eggs many of us enjoy. But obviously, chickens aren't sentient beings, and the child eating the eggs is intentionally disturbing for comedic effect. Chickens actually are sentient, but I think he just means like not like intelligent and conscious and aware like humans and Frog Lady. But anyway, what do you guys think of this whole reaction?
You know,
social media.
Well, a little bit, but I mean, I would never dare to try to tell somebody how to feel about something, right? They're entitled to their opinions and their feelings, and everyone has different life experiences and so on. So that's, you know, completely valid if someone feels that way. But I do kind of fall down on the other side personally more, that it's a TV show, and it isn't real. And the fact is, in nature, like, animals eat other animals' eggs all the time, in reptiles and you know, other mammals, creatures, so yeah. Other creatures, yeah, in real life. And that's just the way of nature, sort of, and nobody's upset about that. I get that there's a difference, of course, because we're dealing with intelligent creatures or so-called intelligent creatures on Star Wars. And if it upset someone, then it upset them. And I respect that. But I didn't have that same reaction when watching it.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's always been the way that you can't do anything without offending somebody. And in this case, you know, you just hear about it more. So if you don't like it, don't watch it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You have the right to say what you want to say and feel how you want to feel. But in the end, you know, the 50 people that are going to stop watching the show isn't going to hurt the numbers.
Yeah. I agree with everything all you guys are saying. Like, I wouldn't want to tell someone, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, because there's a line that all of us would be offended to the point, right, of being upset with a show by. They could show something that would upset all three of us, you know?
Of course.
I mean, it would have to be pretty far over for us sick, twisted fuckers, but they could find something.
Right.
And so, but I love dark humor, and even though I was kind of shocked, ultimately I thought they handled it. I'm glad. It was so funny. And I mean, I'm not a woman, but Jenny and I did have trouble having a second kid, and we did in vitro, and it almost didn't work. We just barely squeaked by, the last embryo took. So, I understand that these things are precious, but I for me, it's just a TV show. I thought it was funny. I liked that it kind of darkened Baby Yoda a little bit, so he's not too cute. On the other hand, I do get that just might have deeply affected some people, and I don't feel good about that. So I don't really know what to say.
Mm-hmm. And from that point of view too, it's kind of like mission accomplished, right? I mean, I think this is kind of what the showrunners and writers wanted to happen.
Yeah.
People to feel on edge about it and be like, oh my God, is he good? Is he bad? What's happening? How do I feel?
Yeah. And I get that, but I also don't think they should go out of their way to try and offend people. I'm not saying that was the case here, but I don't want to see that kind of thing. I don't enjoy seeing that sort of thing that is just intentionally controversial. You know what I mean?
Or even if this ends up being a moment like The Walking Dead, frankly, where season 7, episode 1, you guys who watch Walking Dead will know what I'm talking about with Negan. That really had an impact on the show. Lots of people jumped ship at that point. And I think if that happened with The Mandalorian because of this, Disney would probably regret it. I hope not, but.
No, probably this early on in the show. Yeah, they might, but I don't think it will either. But everybody is different. You know, I saw a comedian once who did a bunch of jokes about a sensitive topic, and a friend of mine was also in the audience, and he was just terribly offended by it based on his life experience. And those were a bunch of jokes about abortion. And, you know, maybe that's a more touchy subject than even this, but it's not all that different maybe, but it came down to what he'd experienced in his life with his partners. And, you know, I don't hold that against anybody who would feel that way.
Right.
You know,
curious to know if any of you guys in the audience have any strong reaction to that, thoughts about anything we've said, whatever, write in, we'll respond. And speaking of responding, let's get into listener feedback.
Alrighty. First one is from Paige Allen. Such a huge world opening episode. Katie Sackhoff reprising her role as Bo-Katan with WWE superstar Sasha Banks by her side. And the name drop of Ahsoka Tano, plus Mandalorians that don't follow the same code, showing that it's actually our Mando who's the outlier following the small sect of ancient Mandalorians. Plus, lots of great action.
Pake loves wrestling. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adam Gaisley, you could feed me this every week for the rest of time. Who needs a big movie every year? This is everything I want delivered weekly. Multiple squid face, stormtroopers, inept Imperials. Love it all. Disney Plus, take my money now.
Yeah.
Damian Vitale says, great episode. Why didn't the Mon Calamari warn Mando that it was a trap? My whole family jumped off the couch and screamed when Baby Yoda was swallowed by that creature on the boat. Looking forward to seeing Ahsoka Tano and finding out more about the Mandalorians. Have not watched the Clone Wars or Rebels. It's all new to me.
Yes, me too, Damian. So I on one hand, I feel a little bit left out, but on the other hand, I'm very excited to learn more. So it's going to be good. Des Coombs, Bryce Dallas Howard did an awesome job with this one.
Yeah. Maria Pereira Granada writes in, we are enjoying it in my family. Watched Clone Wars with my son, now watching Rebels. Looking forward to seeing Ahsoka. My husband is behind, plans on binge watching Mandalorian season one during Thanksgiving break. Glad Baby Yoda didn't eat any more eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Beck says, easily my favorite episode of the season so far, quite possibly one of my favorite episodes of the series as well. I love the fact that they're tying in Clone Wars to this season, and I absolutely cannot wait to see where they take it.
Michael Darwin says, nice to see Cara Thrace, Bo-Katan back. Handled well, too. If you haven't seen the animated series, I don't think you'd be lost by her appearance here. I did enjoy the episode, but I have a weakness for maritime things. And while I am excited for this storyline, I am hoping the show doesn't get too bogged down in existing mythology.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Mm. Alex Belish, four words. Ahsoka Tano is coming. Now that I got that out of my system. The level of detail in the episode is so amazing. The fact that they are taking us to new places makes this so much more interesting. I love how Mando never gets a break, but still keeps going no matter what. I am so glad they explained that Mando is part of a different group of Mandalorians. Katee Sackhoff killed it as Bo-Katan. How can you beat her entrance on the boat? Love the repurposed AT-AT to the frog family finding each other. I think they do a great job of making the child silly and funny, but not over the top. All in all, there was a lot of good information that Mando received and is now on his way. P.S. The artwork this week was so killer. It's like the books are coming to life.
Agree with all that.
Mm-hmm.
Barry Evans says, another great episode. The landing on Trask, the reunion of the Frog Lady and her husband, the introduction of Bo-Katan to live action, seeing an Empire vessel full of stormtroopers, and the return of Moff Gideon. What wasn't to love about this episode? Valuable takeaway, never let a Mon Calamari do your ship repairs. Can't wait for next week and hopefully Ahsoka Tano.
Amazing. Mark McBurney writes, great episode and some fantastic casting in it too. Really pleased to see Katee Sackhoff reprise her role as Bo-Katan in live action. As a wrestling fan, it was fun to see Sasha Banks make an appearance, although I'm a little disappointed that she's not playing Sabine Wren, and we also got Titus Welliver, Lost's Man in Black. Hopefully, we don't have to wait till the last episode to see Ahsoka. This is not the way. And that AT-AT was cool.
Couple mentions of the AT-AT.
Yeah, I loved it too.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. We got a few calls this week. Here is Steve Brown.
Hey guys, it's Steve. I haven't finished the episode yet. I'm going to watch it twice, but I just had to just express my excitement over not just Katee Sackhoff, but Titus Welliver. I love Titus Welliver. He's been great in everything I've seen, from Lost to Bosch to whatever, and great seeing Katee Sackhoff. Okay, I have to send this in because I'm so excited, because I didn't get a chance to watch it a second time, but man, so good. Such a good... I'm so glad they're doing what you guys talked about, and I think I said something in my voicemail last week about starting right where the previous episode ended. They kind of did that because he did say it was going to be a long trip. And then I just love that whole sequence of landing and the tenseness of what's going to happen. And I thought they would just land on the dock hard, but no, they tumble off into the water and then somebody's going to crane them out. I love it. I can't wait to hear you guys talk about the history of Bo-Katan and Asana Taco, what was her name? The woman that Bo-Katan told him to go find. I just love that we're propelling this the story further on, and I'm just excited. Like last episode, when I watched it the second time, I loved it more from your podcast. So thank you for that. So I can't wait to hear what you guys talk about this one. All right, I'm gonna watch it again before next week. Talk to you later.
It's I want a taco. That's her name.
Yeah, and I love how enthusiastic Steve Brown is. Like, yeah, keep coming, Steve. It's great, man.
That's the most enthusiastic I've ever heard of.
Yeah, he's hecka excited.
Yeah, it was a great episode. Here is Mark Kirkman.
Hello, Hell's Podcastica. Finally, Bo-Katan has come to the Mandalorian.
Yeah, we finally got Katie Sackhoff, and yes, this is Mark Kirkman. I just wanted to send you guys some audio feedback, and yeah, I'm so happy about this for the fact that, you know, the last time we got to see Bo-Katan, who Katie Sackhoff did the voice for in the Clone Wars Season 4, is finally in physical form on the Mandalorian. I am so happy. I am so glad. It was amazing. And a lot of things came up out of this episode regarding how Mando is. And apparently the sect that he belongs to is almost like a quote-unquote cult. But Bo-Katan has her own people and they are different, which is pretty cool. I really enjoyed this. This episode was amazing. We saw a lot of things within it that I enjoyed, which was Mando getting the Frog Lady back to her husband and finding, you know, the other Mandalorians that were there, as well as Baby Yoda, or the child, as it were. And this time, he didn't eat the eggs. So, that's awesome. That's pretty cool. I love that. So, I'm just enjoying the shows as they come out. I'm really enjoying the fact that, you know, in this particular episode, you know, the child did not eat any of the frogs. So... That's a plus, because there was a lot of negativity on the internet, unfortunately, but now, you know, everything is out. This is amazing. I just enjoyed it, and that's the whole point of these shows, is to enjoy them and how they are, and I just love what you guys are doing. Continue forth, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say within the podcast itself regarding the episode, so I'll catch you guys later.
Yeah, as much as I thought it was funny last week, I am relieved that he didn't eat any more eggs or any tadpoles this time.
Yeah. Yep.
Agreed.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Last, we got Amber from Wisconsin. She's calling in about last week's episode, which I forgot to get her call last week. Here it is.
Hey, it's Amber from Wisconsin. I'm calling to talk about Chapter 10 of The Mandalorian. So I just wanted to start out by saying that you know, I don't claim to be like a huge Star Wars fan, so don't judge me for not getting any of the lore or anything like that. I actually started getting into Star Wars when The Force Awakens came out, and then when Disney Plus hit, I went back and watched all of the Star Wars movies in order. So I do like them. I love The Mandalorian. Just wanted to start out by saying that I liked the episode. It was funny and intense at times. I thought it was hilarious when, you know, the ship was going down with the Frog Lady screaming and Baby Yoda eating the eggs. I think Mando got a little taste of what parenting is like. You know, tell your kid not to do something, they're going to do it anyway 5 minutes later. But yeah, it was a good episode. The spiders were real creepy. I liked, you know, in the beginning, the little guy with the jetpack. It kind of reminded me of last week with him hanging John Leguizamo from the light post and then letting the creatures go after him. You know, he knew what he was doing when he gave him the jetpack. But yeah, I just wanted to call and give my thoughts. Bye.
Cool.
Sweet.
Nice to have a relatively new Star Wars fan coming to The Mandalorian, eh?
Yeah, I think it's probably drawing in. People are talking about it so much that finally people are like, all right, I'll watch it.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
All right, that is our show. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you want to write in or record a voice message and send it in, you can send it to groovy@podcastica.com.
And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And of course, we're also on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica.
And you can check out other shows we're doing, Minor at podcastica.com, and Chris's podcast is at talkingdeadpodcast.com, where you're covering the spinoffs, and that's it now? I think I asked you this last week, but I forgot.
Yeah, no, we're covering Fear and World Beyond, both each week, but not so much the details of each episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but more about how they impact the greater Walking Dead universe, which I think is going really well.
I gotta listen. Yeah, that sounds interesting. I'm gonna listen to one of your episodes. I've listened in a little while. I'm covering Great British Bake Off on Strange Indeed and this show and the two Walking Dead shows. But you can guess which ones I'm more excited about. It's all good.
Yeah.
All right, that is our show.
Thanks for listening.
I'll just be hanging out here in the cargo area.
It's a trap.